You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 13 August. Local mining production and unemployment data due later this morning. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Chantal Marks from FNB Wealth and Investments. The Supergroup update, and then Cecil, ouch. Ernest North from Naked, benefits of choosing higher car insurance excesses. And Samsung Jami from RMB, they did that research report showing the best investment destinations in Africa. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Public and private sectors' capex plans could see projects of 790 billion ZAR. The Nedbank capital expenditure project listing for 2024 shows a huge uptick in announced projects in the first half of the year. Business Day, Hyprop and Attack conclude sale of West African assets. Attention will shift back to investments in SA, while Hyprop also has a portfolio in Eastern Europe. Morning markets, the US was green, but the S&P was up 0.2 points, so it's 0.0% and you round it. NASDAQ was up 0.2%. Over in the East, mostly green. Sydney's a quarter of a percent higher. Tokyo's 2.2% higher after being closed yesterday. Hong Kong off a tenth of a percent and Tencent up 0.2%. Commodities, green. Gold, $2,504 an ounce. Brent, $81.54. Platinum, $9.43. Palladium, $9.04. Rand, $18.24. Bitcoin, $59,300. And top 40 opening call, a red open, but 50 points or less than a tenth of a percent lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Turning in with Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investment. Chantal, appreciate the early morning. Supergroup, a stock that I know that you like, a tough trading update from them, and probably best defined by the one line that says, the group's trading environment remains challenging. Pretty much across all their markets, they found it, challenging.
Yeah, so I mean, with Supergroup, it's been one of those really terrible years that just everything everywhere went wrong all at once. So if we look at just the way that they structured their statements as well, they start with supply chain Africa, mm-hmm. and they say border delays, port congestion, cabotage laws. That was a new, I think I'm not sure if I'm actually pronouncing it correctly, but that was a new word for me. Yes, it speaks to localization in your local waters. So I didn't know that that was a thing, but that was a thing for them. Bad debts in the coal operation because the coal price was under so much pressure. In supply chain Europe, low automotive park volumes. We know there's economic pressure there as well. Dealerships UK, it was so interesting. The Ford volumes in particular were impacted by Ford deciding to discontinue their best-selling model. So all of these things kind of happened at once for them and had a very negative impact on revenue. By extension, operating profit came under pressure. And all of this happening in a high interest rate environment, meaning that finance costs were pushed up as well. So I think it's one of those years where just everything went wrong. And I think that this actually presents a really nice base, a really nice low base for them to show some decent growth now that the global economy is on its way to some cyclical tailwinds like lower interest rates and lower inflation and a better consumer environment.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I'd never heard of cabotage, and I don't know how to pronounce it, so I'm going to default to your take. And yeah, I mean, just lots going wrong, which sort of like and beyond their control, which is perhaps the key point. That then turns us to Sasol, which was, I mean, I don't know. Sasol just, we had the production update 2 weeks ago. That seemed fairly good, but I mean, write downs left, right, and center, even Secunda, write downs happening there.
Yes, so that's exactly it. The production update was pretty decent. We've seen some really good momentum into the fourth quarter. And I think if you look at that core headline earnings per share number, it's in line with expectations, more or less. So operationally, it was fine. One of the things that they've now admitted, or what they're now a little bit concerned about and why the write-downs are coming, is that chemical prices have been under pressure for such a long time, mm-hmm. and it's impacted their margins in those businesses. And they are saying, we are not sure if chemical prices will ever recover to our previous long-term assumptions, and therefore our chemicals assets are probably worth less than we thought they were. And that is why they've taken these write-downs. So it's an accounting measure. It's a non-cash measure. Yeah. It does impact profitability for that specific year. But it's not something that I'm overly concerned about, because you never know in commodity markets. Things turn very, very quickly. And they're definitely not going to write back the value of those assets. So it's a once-off thing. I think my takeaway is, I think operational momentum is quite positive, and I think that we could probably expect a better year again with those cyclical tailwinds coming through, and now a really nice low base for them to grow off of.
Yeah, I mean, forward PE of 3, and I'm looking at the price forecast, and it's pretty much, in fact, the lows are 142 and it's trading 128.50. And I know that there's a bank out there that says 550 is the target, which seems a very long way away. Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investment. Always appreciate the early morning.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanley Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Ernest North, co-founder at Naked Insurance. Ernest, appreciate the early morning again. Insurance excess, and I was going to say car insurance excess. I imagine you could do it in a household, but we're talking cars today. I mean, this is essentially what you pay regardless of the cost of the claim. It's usually, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, maybe 5,000 rand. And it gives you, I suppose, that certainty that if you do need to claim, this is what you're going to pay. But you can tweak it and adjust it and work it in your favor, perhaps.
Good morning, Simon. Yes, it's nice to be chatting to you. It is something that a lot of people don't pay enough attention to when they're buying car insurance. And it's very important that when you're insuring, you pick your cover that is most appropriate for you, that you understand what will happen in the case of a claim. And like you said, an excess is a mechanism that ensures that the insurer knows you have a little bit of skin in the game. The majority of the cover should be borne by the insurer themselves, but you as the policyholder will be on the hook for the first 2 or 3 grand, depending on what you pick. And it is a way of ensuring that every small little ding or little scratch is not being claimed for, which would have made insurance significantly more expensive.
I get that point 100%. And as I said, it's usually a set amount, but it could be a percentage. And there can be other T's and C's. For example, perhaps the age of the driver. If you've got a young driver, there might be a higher excess. Again, this is almost sort of a carrot and stick between the insurer and the client.
And that particular one, or that example of additional excesses, you mentioned the reference to age. Mm-hmm. There are other things like the time of night that you're driving or whether you have an accident in the first 6 months of the policy. South Africa is split at the moment between policies that where you have a basic excess, but then you have all these extra penalties that apply, which you need to go read somewhere in your small print, where there are certain policies, sort of the new generation of insurance is saying, the excess you pick is the only amount you'll pay. And so I think it's important to ensure that you understand your policy as to whether those extra penalties will apply, but specifically that you pick an amount that you're comfortable with. You need to budget for roughly 2 claims a year. Touch wood, it doesn't happen. But if 2 claims happen a year, can you afford the excess? So don't pick an excess of 10 grand if that's not something that's realistic for your financial position.
Because you can. I mean, as you say, the excesses are traditionally, you know, I don't know, 2,000-3,000 from my experiences of having insurance. And I think I've claimed once on my policy. But you can push that excess higher. Take your 3,000 excess to 10,000. Does it have a significant impact then on the premium?
Absolutely. And that's the beauty of doing things online, and especially doing something on the app, where you can play around with that excess, other dimensions of your cover as well. You can see how your premium changes. But especially in the case of your excess, we see a lot of people that are driving higher end cars, mm-hmm. and typically people that are in a better financial position increase their excess to 10,000 or even 20,000, and it drops their premium significantly. So you can play around on the app. The interesting thing is the data that we're seeing of how the difference between young people and old people, and on average, older people that are more experienced in doing insurance and probably have had the bad fortune of claiming in the past and know that it's something they need to budget for, on average, we're finding those people are picking slightly lower excesses, and they're willing to pay a slightly higher premium, but they know that if a claim happens, they rather want a lower excess. So that data is very interesting, that it seems as though younger people are a little bit more brave in picking higher excesses.
And I suppose it really about managing cash flow. I mean, the question is, do I pay a little bit more every month, or do I take my excess higher and then, you know, it sort of carry some of that risk in the sense, some of that burden, and putting that into the hand of the customer and saying it's your call how you want to manage it.
Absolutely. It is all about the customer understanding their own financial position, their own cash flow position, or easy access to funds should something happen. They know best what is best for them. So on the digital platform, manage your own policy. But there's another dimension that's very interesting. And I think for a customer to understand what their car is worth and to look at their excess as a percentage of the value of the car. So a guideline that we often give people is that it's certainly doable, but it's strange or out of the ordinary to pick an excess that's more than 2.5 or 3% of the value of your car. And so if your car is worth 200,000 Rand, our data shows that typically those people are picking an excess that is around 4,000 Rand. So between 2 and 2.5%. So I think it is an interesting guideline for consumers to understand what their car is worth, mm-hmm. and to follow the guideline that most of our customers are picking an excess that is below 3% of the value of their car.
Okay, that's a great number, because I've looked at that excess and I'm always like, I don't know, you know, is there a right number or is it just my cash flow? I like that, a number 3% or lower than the value of the car. We'll leave it there. Ernest North, co-founder, Naked Insurance. Appreciate the early morning. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Have you increased your excess to reduce premiums? Or perhaps you've cut your excess? I mean, have you sort of looked at that and managed it as a part of your cash flow process? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
When you stay invested over time in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money's in for some smooth sailing. With our global partners, JP Morgan Asset Management at the helm, your money can withstand the pressure and bad weather day-to-day market conditions cause. All aboard? Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Samson Yomi, a strategic analyst at RMB. Sam, appreciate the time today. Your 2024 edition of Where to Invest in Africa report out last week. The top two, Seychelles and Mauritius. And I think a lot of folks might be a bit surprised. I suppose in part maybe being islands and perhaps being a little bit smaller helps them. But what were the themes that propelled these two to the top of the list?
I think there's a few things. So we started Where to Invest in 2011. And obviously then there's been issues with data. And as the years have gone by, there's an improvement in some of the data collection that we've been seeing on the continent. And so we've changed the methodology of how we look at Where to Invest. So we introduced a few more pillars. So moving from 2 pillars to about 4 pillars, we've introduced things like economic performance and potential, market accessibility and innovation, economic stability and the investment climate, as well as social and human development. Back to your question on Seychelles and Mauritius. So obviously, you know, in terms of economic performance and potential, relatively low in terms of size of GDP, you know, the growth forecast, perhaps even the population size, but they do relatively well on things like GDP per capita. Yeah. The other thing that Seychelles and Mauritius do relatively well is when you think about things like market accessibility and innovation. So they rank quite highly. And among the two islands, I think when you're looking at social and human development, which is becoming increasingly more important in the investment landscape, Seychelles and Mauritius obviously do relatively well compared to other countries in the top five that include South Africa.
Yeah, South Africa coming in at fourth. Is that one of the areas, social and human development? And when you say that phrase, the first thing that jumps to my mind is an unemployment rate north of 30%. I mean, is that one of the big drivers of where we fall down?
Yeah, so I think South Africa scores relatively well in many aspects, but yes, I would agree. The unemployment rate is one of the biggest lags compared to the rest of the continent. And then when we look at things like inequality, obviously, South Africa ranks last among the 31 countries that we've looked at. So a lot of positive things out of South Africa in terms of size of GDP, in terms of market accessibility. You know, we have a category called Forex stability and liquidity, where South Africa actually ranks number one. So a lot of positivity, but unfortunately on the social and human development pillar, the South Africa fares fairly low.
Yeah, a hugely unequal economy. I think all South Africans understand and accept that. The one area which you highlight a couple of times in the report is infrastructure and the need for infrastructure investment. And it's not a new theme, but it is so hugely important. Simple things like a road or a school or a hospital, which is, you know, perhaps not that simple, critically needed across the continent.
I would agree. I mean, we've seen all sorts of infrastructure and infrastructure development going on, but clearly not enough. There is this figure that goes around about $100 billion deficit for infrastructure development annually on the continent, and that's clear. But I think one of the trends that we've been seeing is a lot of investment coming into things like renewable energy. So in 2023, for instance, $10 billion flowed through the economies of Zimbabwe, South Africa, and Egypt just on some of the solar and wind projects. So, you know, the dynamic for infrastructure has shifted a bit, but still a lot needed. And we've seen a lot more in things like renewables.
Egypt and Morocco, respectively, third and fifth. Does proximity to Europe make a difference there? My sense is, you know, if I want to ship something to Europe, I've got to fly it all the way over a continent before I get to the Mediterranean. Does proximity matter enough?
Yeah, so I think proximity does matter. We have something called market accessibility and innovation as one of our pillars. Mm-hmm. And it also looks at connectedness. So connectedness regionally and connectedness to the world. And I think Egypt and Morocco rank quite highly there. I think there's also a lot of support for Egypt, you know, when it comes to the regional integration and the Gulf nations. So you have that. You have a large GDP in the likes of Egypt. It was the largest in 2023 just because the been some devaluations of the Nigerian naira as well. So I'd say Egypt ranks third for various reasons and its economic complexity. Morocco is a country where there's consistency. So I think throughout the pillars that we look at, you know, they rank relatively high across.
You mentioned regional integration. Of course, there's the African Continental Free Trade Agreement. That would obviously be much broader than individual countries. You were looking at individual countries there. But something like that could be a significant boost. I've chatted with a number of folks around that over the years. That really can, I don't want to say leapfrog, but help Africa as a whole and the individual countries as individuals.
Yes, I think it can. I mean, there's been information from the AU to suggest that, you know, Africa could raise an additional 450 billion revenues by 2035. The continent could be about $29 trillion by 2050. But of course, there's still a few issues to getting us to a stage where those forecasts become a reality. There's still a lot of programs in pilot phases, so there is a little bit of a slow progress. And I'd say, you know, there's issues like info sharing between countries that also are hampering some of the progress. Ideally, in coming years, we should see the fruits of the Free Trade Continental Area come to fruition.
We'll leave it there, Samson Yami, strategic analyst for RMB. Appreciate the time.
That's it for today. We were chatting with SAPI CEO yesterday, Steve Binney. That third quarter results, better than expected. It's usually a soft quarter for them. We asked you if you invest in paper and packaging companies. Over half of you said no, they are old school. The rest was split between yep, but you prefer others, and a bunch of you saying yeah, some great value in SAPI. Have your say, have your vote, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning at the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Benefits of a strong rand.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.